Hi, and welcome to Adventure Dog Podcast, the podcast all about doing amazing things with your doggos. I'm Nathan Berry, she's Rue the Shark, and this is episode 17. Today, we talk trail etiquette. Rue minds her manners, and I have an interview about two trail trekking brothers. Do an internet search for dog trail etiquette, and you will get nearly 5 million results, give or take about 20,000, and that's a lot of advice. And they all pretty much say the exact same thing, that you should have your pups on a leash in the places where it's required, that they should be under control, even on a leash, and that you should leave no trace. If you're listening to a dog podcast, you probably know all the basics already. So, number one, first and foremost, do the proper training and practice good obedience with your pup even before you hit the trail. Make sure before you go that dogs are allowed on the trail or in the location that you're going to. If it's a leash area, use a leash. And none of those retractable ones. Those things are awful and dangerous. If you're looking for a cool leash, I know a few people, including in my upcoming interview. She makes awesome hiking leashes. Yield to all other hikers, horses, and yes, even cyclists. Technically, cyclists are supposed to yield to all pedestrians, and they will if they're being polite, but often they're moving faster and respond much slower, so it's sometimes easier to just heel to the right side of the trail and let them pass. I even yield to other dogs because it's easier for me to control Rue than to expect what the other hiker and dog are going to do. Leave no trace, pack out your waste, and avoid going off the trail unless it's just absolutely necessary, like when you're passing. But here's a few that you may not have thought of. Control is an important thing, even when you're on a leash. Before our conversation coming up, Ashley, the dog mom to Sox and Echo at Wandering Ridgebacks, states that just because you have a leash on your dog doesn't mean you have control over it. And that is a great reason for constant training with commands like come, heel, stay, and leave it. As for leaving no trace, when you encounter a puddle or mud, go through the middle of it. Don't try to tiptoe around the edges because that's what makes it larger. Finally, for passing on trail, those that are going uphill have the right of way. Avoid hiking in large groups, and if you are in a large group, remember to go single file on trails. When you're passing someone that's going in the same direction, just kindly let them know that you're going to be passing and try to pass to the left. It's kind of like driving on the road, unless you're British, and then I'm not sure what side of the trail you should be on. If you're British, let me know. But when passing, be polite and say hello. With passing cyclists, I will always let them know if there are more hikers or runners and dogs in the group behind me, so they'll know what to expect. In the end, it really comes down to just be polite. We all make mistakes from time to time, and we should all be forgiving. We go adventuring with our dogs to get rid of the stress. So as hard as it may be, try not to let someone else or their dog's bad behavior, which you might not be able to control, affect your day. And if you need something to cheer you up, my next guest is Ashley, and her two beautiful boys, a couple of Rhodesian Ridgebacks in Washington, Sox and Echo, who hasn't let a few challenging years slow him down. Yeah, I guess y'all were just out on, you mentioned you were out on an adventure, so y'all were out somewhere.
Yeah, we went camping at the beach this weekend, and of course I had no service down there, so that's okay. Pretty typical. Usually I'm in the backcountry for days at a time, and
Which I assume there's also no service there either.
You know, actually, that's funny. Sometimes if I'm standing on like just the right rock, I will have full service. But if I move, I have no service.
If I climb the right tree.
If I absolutely desperately need to find service, I probably can.
That's funny. Well, if you want to go ahead and start, I'm ready if you are.
Sure, I'm ready when you are.
Okay. Well, yeah, if you just want to introduce yourself and your two pups.
Well, I'm Ashley, and we have the Instagram page at Wandering Ridgebacks with Sox and Echo. Those are my two babies. And we're located up here in the beautiful Pacific Northwest in Washington State.
Okay. Where specifically? What area?
We're actually very close to Seattle, so we're on the western side of the state, kind of in the more metropolitan area, I guess you could say.
So you're right up there, like around the Rainier area, and gosh, lots of beautiful stuff up in that area.
Yeah, we're never more than about an hour from being in the backcountry, which we're pretty lucky to be that close. Yeah.
I'm a little jealous. Okay. And so, tell me a little bit about Sox and Echo. And I will go ahead and say, just because I've been looking at your feed lately, that Echo is kind of a new arrival.
Yes. So Echo and Sox are actually litter mates.
Okay.
So we've had Sox since birth. And then Echo came back to us in March of this year, ironically, through this weird turn of events where I saw a photo of him on Instagram.
Okay.
And I reached out to the gal and I said, "Hey, why do you have that dog?" And she said, "Well, I'm just the transport person. I don't know for the rescue." And I said, "Well, that dog, you know, kind of belongs here with us."
Huh.
He had belonged to a friend of mine. It's kind of a long, involved story. But Echo was severely abused as a puppy, which is how he lost his hind leg.
Oh, no. Okay.
So we got him back as a puppy. But when I got him back, we had his leg amputated, and I was just not in a position to take a special needs dog because I couldn't, at the time, give him the care that he needed.
Okay.
So a friend of mine took him, and through a tragic turn of events, she was military, wound up getting sent away, and he wound up in rescue, where I saw his picture on Instagram and immediately reached out, and we were able to pull him out of the system, thankfully.
Okay.
And he was in really bad shape when we got him, almost in kidney failure. He was a 2 on the body conditioning score. So a 2 out of 10, 5 being healthy, 1 being completely emaciated, almost dead. So I reached out to the rescue, and this, of course, all happens in a matter of days. And
yeah.
And she said, "Well, what do you want to do?" And I said, "I don't want him going back into the system." I said, "I'm happy to fly out to the East Coast and pick him up." And she said, "Well, are you serious?" I'm like, "Yeah." She's like, "Okay." So literally within a matter of probably 48 hours, I booked a flight and I called my vet and I said, "Here's the deal. Echo's coming back. When are you working?" And she said, "Well, I'm only on Wednesday." So on Saturday, I worked from 7 a.m. until about 3 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
I got on a red eye to Philadelphia, got into Philadelphia at 6:30 the next morning, drove a little over an hour to picked him up, put him in the car, and he was in very bad shape. I mean, we're talking at death's door. We got him just barely stabilized to move. And I drove back to Seattle, and I was home by Tuesday.
Wow.
So Sunday morning till Tuesday afternoon, I drove 3,000 miles.
Wow.
And we got him to our vet first thing Wednesday morning. We had to amputate his tail. Sadly, we weren't able to save that. It was completely infected. And we ran some blood work, found out that his kidney function was compromised. My vet said probably another week in that condition and he would be dead. And just this absolutely awful story of this dog that's just been horribly abused, like for no reason other than life circumstances.
Yeah.
So not really knowing what we're getting ourselves into, I just told my husband, who, thank God, he is a saint. I said, I'm getting on a flight. I need you to drop me off at the airport. And he said, okay. Then I said, and we're not getting rid of this dog ever again. And he said, okay. And I said, I don't know if he's going to be afraid of men, because the owner who broke his leg was male. And again, haven't seen this dog in 3 years. I don't know what we're getting. I said, he's got bad separation anxiety from what I understand, and he's going to cost us a lot of money in vet bills. And my husband just said, I'll drop you off at the airport. So here I am Tuesday evening. I've been driving for basically 3 days straight, and my husband picks me up, and Echo just like laid down next to him on the couch, and they've been best buds ever since.
That's terrific.
Yeah. And Echo, we dealt with some separation anxiety for about the first 2 weeks. We've had to put him on some medication to help with that, but that's okay. Yeah. But, you know, I was able to start working from home, which was very, very good. And then every time we would leave, you know, he'd have accidents in the house and he would cry. So we had to work through that. But it was just definitely like trial by fire. But after that 2 week period, he's made leaps and bounds. We started taking him hiking. We didn't know what to expect with, you know, having a tripod. And he's just blown us out of the water at every turn.
And before I like break down in tears listening to this. So yeah, I, you know, obviously I do have to say that he is beautiful, and just the few photos that I've seen him in so far are amazing. So,
well, thank you.
And of course we'll get into it a little bit more, but this is a terrific, happy and continuing ending, not ending, but a continuing story. But at least a happy ending to what sounds like just a terrible, terrible ordeal. And they were litter mates. So what kind of miracle that you happen to come across this photo of him?
Oh, that is the craziest part, because I had actually started following whoever's account it was, because I had started Socks on a Raw Diet, and someone had recommended her website for raw feeding tips. So like within a week, I go from, oh, I'm following this page, to wait, why is Echo on her page? Like how,
oh my, you know, gosh,
what's the connection there? So just this crazy how this little app has brought Echo home to us and basically saved his life.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows what would have happened to him had we not intervened.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so yes, before I do actually start, you know, breaking down into tears over here. So
it's a hard story.
Yeah, definitely. But again, a terrific, terrific end to the whole situation. So they are litter mates. They are 4 years old. Actually, I guess their birthday is coming up.
It is.
Pretty soon. In August?
In August. August 5th.
Okay.
They're going to be 5 years old, so it's their golden birthday. And if you think I'm not having a huge party for them, well, you're crazy.
So have they always been active? And I guess you've only had Echo just recently, and I already know he's active since you've had him. But have you always been getting Socks out?
We started taking Socks out when he was about 18 months old.
Okay.
And he started doing like small little trails with me, you know, trail runs here and there. Nothing, we didn't want to push him because he's abnormally large for the breed, and we wanted to make sure that his joints were closed and fully formed before we did anything too crazy.
Yeah.
But we started getting him out, and he's always been active with us. He goes pretty much everywhere we go. And we've seen him build a lot of confidence on the trails. He wasn't always the most confident puppy.
Okay.
So we've taught him to scale rocks and cross logs, and now he's like a little mountain goat. He shows Echo. It's pretty funny. If Echo is having trouble with something, Socks will go back and show him. Like, he's like, no, here's how you do it. It's pretty cute to watch.
That's awesome. Were you also pretty active yourself before that?
I had always been very active. I used to be basically a horse trainer equestrian as a profession. And then like I got into a really bad car accident right before they were born, and that basically ended my career. So I'd always been into hiking and stuff, but I got more into trail running and more into hiking as my hobby because I don't ride much anymore. It's just not worth the risk.
Wow, that's pretty cool. Training horses. So when y'all first started getting out, did you start out just immediately getting them out onto some hard stuff? Kind of how did that go? How did you get socks?
I started him like I would start anyone or anything who's new to hiking. You know, we started with some like flat trails, and then we started taking him for trail runs and kind of increased his mileage. And then we started increasing his elevation gain, and then, you know, showing him some more technical aspects of this is how you, you know, scramble over rocks. And yeah. This is how you cross a log, because we didn't want to throw too much at him. And he was still a puppy, so we didn't want to freak him out or anything.
Yeah.
But we just, you know, gradually progressed him into it, and finally got him up to the level where we were at. And now, you know, he goes backpacking with us like it's nothing.
Okay. What kind of mileage do y'all typically do when y'all go out backpacking?
It depends. My idea of a day hike is like 25 miles sometimes.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, I try not to take the boys on anything more than 15 in a day, because with Echo only having 3 legs, I don't want to push him and, you know, possibly injure him.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And I guess his tail amputation occurred pretty recently once you got him. How is he doing without his tail?
He's doing very well. I was very concerned about how that would impact his balance, because many tripods rely on their tail for balance, but he adapted very quickly.
That's impressive. Talking about getting outside, being active, you know, let me go back to your first adventure with socks, or maybe even if you'd prefer, maybe about your first adventure with socks and then your first adventure with the both of them together.
Well, that's funny. So the first time we took socks on his quote real hike, we took him up what's called Little Cy, which is a smaller version of a pretty popular hike here.
Okay.
And it's, I think it's about 5 miles round trip, and it's got maybe 2,500 feet of gain, but it's got some like rock scramble sections and some switchbacks, and it's got some flat sections, and just kind of gives a variety. So when Sox was a little less than 2, we took him up that for the first time. And then after we had gotten Echo accustomed to being on some, there are like some flat running trails here.
Yeah.
We actually took Sox and Echo up Little Cy for their very first hike together.
Oh, cool. So they,
so kind of same mountain.
So they're both of their first adventures pretty much in the same place.
Yep.
Awesome. How big is Sox?
Sox is roughly 110 pounds, and he stands almost at my hip. So he's like the size of a juvenile Great Dane.
Okay. Is Echo pretty much the same size?
Echo is much smaller. Echo is more of the breed standard Ridgeback. We like to keep him about 75 pounds, and he's maybe 3 or 4 inches shorter at the shoulder than Sox is.
And since you've gotten him, has obviously if his condition, his physical condition was pretty bad, how has he improved in this time? I mean, how much weight did he put on, and what was his process of getting kind of strengthened up?
I think he was under 50 pounds.
Oh, wow.
When he was picked up by the rescue, and I believe I think by the time I got there and got him, the rescuer had him up to about 52 pounds.
Okay.
So we've put almost 20 pounds on him.
Wow. Okay. And are you expecting that he's going to get any bigger than that?
No, we're going to keep him a little bit on the lean side just to try and avoid putting any stress on his joints, because his weight distribution is uneven.
Okay. And I guess the reason I was asking that was, how has, especially with Echo, obviously being a tripod, but with Sox, like being a larger dog, rock scrambling and trail running, I would think that a smaller dog would probably be a little more efficient, but assuming he's got the experience. How has that gone?
Sox is absolutely incredible on pretty much anything we take him on. The nice thing about having a dog his size is he's got so much reach. Okay. So for him to hop 6 feet up is nothing.
Yeah.
Whereas if you have a smaller dog, you know, that might be a little bit more of a stretch. You might have to boost them up. And Sox just, you know, puts his front feet up there and climbs right up.
Yeah.
We've never encountered any real challenges with him being too big on the trails. That's okay. For sure.
I could just imagine, like, someone taking a Great Dane out rock scrambling or on trails, and just size-wise, it would be maybe more difficult. I could be wrong on that, but anyone out there has a Great Dane and goes trail running or rock scrambling with their dogs, I'd love to hear about this.
We have run into, you know, several hikes where we've reached points where neither my husband nor I feel like it's safe for him to continue. And at that point, we just call it and turn around because it's just not worth it. I mean, the mountain's not going anywhere.
Well, I guess kind of leading into maybe some of your favorite local spots, dog parks, trails.
There is a place called Paradise Valley Conservation Area, not too far from us, and it's got a network of, I think, 12 miles of trails. It's one of my favorite spots to go running.
Okay.
We typically don't do off-leash dog parks. There's an old kind of decommissioned golf course not too far from us. That's a great place that we love to do play dates and stuff at.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the unofficial dog park of the area.
Huh. I love golf courses. We've got one just down the street from us, and it is a lot of fun to play on after hours.
Yeah, they're perfect for getting your dogs out and getting them running and playing with other pups.
Yeah, just rolling hills and grassy, and yeah, a lot of fun.
Yep.
Other places around town that you like?
Gosh, there are just so many there's this whole thing that's referred to as like the I-90 corridor in Washington.
Okay.
And we're not that far from the I-90 corridor where there are just, you know, basically hikes off every exit. So it's just kind of like a choose your own adventure. Okay, we're getting off here. We're going to hit this trailhead. It's a quick before or after work, you know, midweek kind of thing where we can go as far as we want, as long as we want, as high as we want kind of deal.
So you're pretty close to trails.
We're very close to trails. I'm about an hour from two different major intersections of the PCT with major freeways.
Okay.
So I like to, for my longer runs, I'll take the pups up because it's easy for them to run on, and you know, you can go pretty much as far as you want in any direction.
Yeah. And I guess that's, it's hilly, but that's a pretty, and for anyone that's not familiar, PCT would be the Pacific Crest Trail.
That's correct. And it runs from all the way from the Mexican border to the Canadian border.
Okay. And so I assume that gets a lot of traffic. So it's kind of like a super highway of a trail.
It kind of is. But typically people are pretty spaced out on it. And
okay.
A lot of people do what's called the PCT through hike. Well, they're literally hike the entire thing in about 3 months.
Okay.
So they go, I think it's 2,800 miles total from border to border.
Yeah. But pretty smooth, not too technical, I assume.
No, and any time that you have elevation gain, it's usually pretty gradual and pretty well switched back. You know, if you're hiking 2,800 miles at a time, you don't want to encounter too much gain and loss if you don't have to.
Yeah. And then you also have Point Defiance.
Point Defiance Park, that's a park down in the Tacoma area, and it has a 5 mile trail loop, and then it has a smaller 3 mile loop. And actually, Amanda Leilani's mom works at the Point Defiance Zoo.
Okay.
So it's kind of a fun little trail if you need to just get a quick, you know, while you're still in the city, get out for a quick run, and it runs along the Puget Sound part of the way, and then you can actually see parts of the zoo from it. It's just
nice.
Kind of a fun experience. Yeah.
Okay. What are some of your favorite places, maybe a little further out, places that you kind of have to put a little more planning into, maybe weekends or maybe once a month kind of thing?
We love going down to Bend, Oregon. there are tons of trails down there and just kind of new places to explore, but it's a bit of a drive for it to just be like a one day type thing.
Yeah.
So that's one of our favorite places to go. We're within a few hours of North Cascades National Park.
Okay.
And there are some dog friendly trails in the recreation areas on either side of that, that we also like to hit up. There's some beautiful scenery up there.
Do you guys go pretty regularly back to Bend?
We try and go at least a couple of times a year, but we try and go during the off season. There's a half marathon that I like to run down there in April. It's the Bend half. And then we usually go like in the fall, October, November-ish.
I guess I didn't realize from looking through the Instagram, you don't talk much about it, about the whole, I guess, the running aspect.
Many people who have Ridgebacks are runners by default because that's the only way we stay sane.
That was, you know, that's actually one of the funny things I noticed about looking at both Sox and Echo. They remind me so much of Vizslas.
They are similar. In fact, they get mistaken a lot for Vizslas.
Yeah, except for the ridge.
The ridge and the size. The size is definitely, yeah.
But totally, just looking at their faces, it's so similar to a Vizsla. So I assume that because they have a little bit of the same look, they're probably also pretty terrific runners.
They're amazing runners. Supposedly in the history of the breed, they can run up to 30 miles at a time.
Wow.
I have yet to test that theory. But if I don't take them running at least 5 days a week, it's just complete chaos in our household where they're body slamming each other against the walls and shredding toys. And I mean, they're not being naughty. They just have energy and they're
yeah.
I'm like, okay, it's time for us to go for a run.
I'm a little bit familiar with that. What is a typical run for them? I mean, what's an easy run for them?
An easy run for them is probably anything up to 5 miles, where okay. I'm like, yeah, anything less than that, they're kind of looking at me, and then they'll start. My husband and I taught them this game where they'll run back and forth between us at like a full sprint, and we do it to work on their recall,
mm-hmm.
but it also works to wear them out. So if my husband's not with me and we're out on a trail, they'll run to about where he would be standing and then sprint back. And they'll do that
wow.
if I haven't run far enough, in their opinion.
So just kind of tracking back and forth, back and forth.
Yep. For about probably no more than 50 yards, if they can, as long as it's like a clear line of sight on the trail, they make sure they can see me.
Yeah. Is Echo able to keep or maintain about the same speed?
Echo can run almost as fast as Sox can.
Okay.
It's really incredible to see.
So it's really not slowing him down at all.
No. In fact, we weren't sure what to expect. And the first time we did take him out to the golf course that's nearby and turn him loose, and he took off running, it like brought tears to my eyes, because I was like, oh my gosh, this is so amazing to see.
Yeah. Wow. And I'll bet it was also a big sense of relief to some degree to be like, yep, this is going to be just normal.
Actually, yes. And I know that might sound bad, but I was like, okay, this dog is not going to be nearly as limited as we anticipated.
Yeah. There's a group that I run with pretty regularly during the week, and oftentimes I'll take Rue out, and one of my friends has a dog that's also a tripod with a right rear leg amputation, I believe. His name
oh,
is Scout.
So same as Echo.
Yep. And he is just as fast. I mean, he keeps up. He goes. So yeah, it's just normal everyday business.
Yeah, I mean, they don't know that they're handicapped. So, I mean, I wouldn't even call Echo handicapped, because he has no idea. And he doesn't limit himself, and we try not to limit him unless it's a scenario where we think it might be dangerous, you know, but we would do that with Sox too.
Sure. Yeah. Dogs are really great about adapting. And I think to some degree it brings up the idea that a handicap or a limitation is more of a psychological. It's something that, especially with humans, I think we apply that handicap mentally more than it is a physical handicap.
I would agree with that, definitely.
and this is pretty good proof that that is the case. So, well, you know, with him being a tripod, does he have any specific limitations? Have you noticed anything that would hold him back at all?
We haven't noticed anything. Sometimes he'll need help, like he'll need a boost. Sometimes he wears out a little bit faster than Sox does, but he's got to work a little bit harder.
Okay.
But, you know, he's very clever about things. So when we ask him to hop up in the truck, we have a running board. He uses the running board to get in and out. And, yeah. You know, he kind of uses like steps up onto the floor and then up onto the seat. So he just, we've kind of just let him or tried to create a space where he is able to learn and show us what he's capable of.
Yeah.
Because otherwise I'm like total helicopter mom and I wrap him in like bubble wrap and, you know, nothing would ever happen to him.
Well, is there any specific gear or items that you use? Harnesses, leashes, collars with them?
I use my own leashes. So I, you know, I have the company Handle the Hound and we make Biothane. One thing I do always have handy is I always have what's called a traffic lead, which is like a 9-inch loop with a clip on the end.
Okay.
I always have two of those clipped to my backpack. So that way, if they are off leash and I need to, you know, leash them up really fast for whatever reason, those are right there to grab. We do use the Easy Dog seatbelt harness.
Okay.
Which is crash tested and, you know, after trying several different crash-tested seatbelts. That's just something I'm kind of adamant about having because you just never know. And
yeah.
When we're back on the Forest Service roads, I've noticed it kind of helps them. If we hit a big bump, it helps them stay on the seats and kind of helps them balance a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. If anything, just to retain them to, I guess they're in the back seat most of the time?
They are in the back seat. We don't ever put them in the bed of the truck.
Okay.
Sometimes Echo is in the front seat and I'm in the back seat of Sox, but you know, just how it works out.
Yeah. And I'll include that in the show notes, of course. You said that's the Easy Dog harness or Easy Dog seat belt.
Easy Dog seat belt harness. It has a really long name on Amazon.
Yeah. I'll definitely just put that in the show notes for people to go to go check out. And tell me again your Instagram for your, you said your leashes, and do you also make collars as well?
I make collars and leashes. It's called Handle the Hound, so it's just at Handle the Hound on Instagram.
Yeah, I'll definitely include that. And
to be
totally honest, I have not had a chance to go and check that out myself until I guess I didn't realize that was you, so I'll definitely have to go and take a look at those.
Well, thank you. I'm not the best at promoting myself.
Well, that's okay. Okay, so going back, I'm going to go back into... Sorry,
okay.
I wander. I have a bad habit of wandering. I'm really curious. You mentioned that you do some raw feeding, and I'd love to hear kind of your take on it, what research you've done, and how you incorporate raw feeding or raw diet with both Sox and Echo.
So... I did a ton of research. I'm kind of a little bit crazy on the research side of things on raw feeding. And last year I did try and put Sox on it and we tried it for about a month where I made all of our raw food at home and, you know, measured everything and portioned everything out and meal prep for him the same way I meal prep for us.
Okay.
And it didn't work for him. So
in what way? Like he didn't like it or it just wasn't beneficial?
A little bit
for him?
Of both. Like he refused to eat, like I would have to, he refused to eat like chicken thighs. I would have to cut them into super tiny pieces for him. Anything with bone in it, he didn't want. You know, he was fine eating like organ meat. Like he loved beef heart and beef liver, but wanted nothing. He loves fruits and vegetables, so that was never a problem.
Okay.
But certain meats he just didn't want to eat. And then he'd go through bouts. And it said that it would take about 30 days for their systems to level out, but he'd go through bouts where he'd just have really bad diarrhea. And I'm like, it just, you know, he'd be okay for a few days, then he'd have some diarrhea, and then he'd be okay for a few days. And just, he kind of just never found that balance. So I did some more research and talked to a friend of mine who's very much into raw feeding. And she said that it just doesn't work for some bloodlines.
Okay.
Like some bloodlines just don't take to it. So I just kind of chalked it up to that and stopped trying to meal prep for me and him. And so the closest to raw feeding that we do is I will use dehydrated raw food when we go backpacking.
Okay.
Because it's lighter,
yeah,
and they seem to do really well on it. So I'll use Northwest Naturals and then Sojo's original recipe. I usually mix the two together and into little baggies, and that's what we take backpacking when we take them.
So then I guess Sox is still on the rest of the time he's just on a regular kibble?
Just on a regular kibble. We don't feed grain-free.
Yeah.
They get supplements. We do joint supplements, and they get seaweed for their bad breath, but they actually don't have bad breath because we feed seaweed. And then Echo's on a couple different calming supplements just to kind of help him, you know, still adjust to being in a new home.
Huh. Well, I think you're probably the first person I've talked to that has gone on to and then back off of a raw diet. So interesting to hear that.
I mean, I'm a firm believer in doing what works for your dog, and no two dogs are the same. So I don't think that any two diets are going to be the same, just like for people, you know.
Yeah.
What works for one person doesn't work for the other.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think it's good for people to understand that it doesn't have to be all or nothing or all one way. When you first started him onto it, I mean, did you just go, obviously with a transition, but did you just go into a full raw diet, or did you try doing like toppers or anything like that, where it was a mixture of kibble and raw?
I've always given him like dehydrated toppers.
Okay.
So he's always had that as a portion of his diet. I've never done like straight raw toppers until I just switched, you know, we gradually transitioned into the raw diet.
Okay.
And then that was all raw. He gets all kinds of fruits and vegetables. Bananas are his absolute favorite. Like he will freak out if you show him a banana. So that, you know, that aspect of it was never an issue. It just seemed to be being on raw meat all the time just didn't agree with his system.
Yeah. Where did you source all of your meats from?
I sourced from a butcher shop, and then we have my father-in-law is very into hunting, so we were lucky to have access to some more exotic meats like elk and venison and moose, and I think we even had some bear at one point.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I've been talking a lot to pretty much, oh gosh, I'd say that, you know, almost every person I've talked to so far has done or is doing some form of raw diet. So I am learning a whole lot about it right now. And eventually at some point I'm going to start incorporating it in. But, you know, like you, it's just been 3 months of research right now.
Yeah. Well, and that's, you know, you just have to do the research on it. And then I you know, give it a solid 30 to 45 day transition period, because I think that is at the minimum that it takes. And, you know, I think a lot of people's dogs take right to it, but mine just wasn't one of them.
Yeah. Well, I'm pretty sure that Rue would take right to it. She will eat anything. And there's a lot of times where when we're on trips, or went after we've done really big, long runs, like she's done some 18-mile trail runs with me before. Definitely days like that, she'll get treats. She gets raw food. Like, essentially, I will pick up New York strip steak for her. So she gets, she is a big fan of meat.
that's
never
good.
Been an issue. So.
Yeah, well, and every now and then Sox will beg for like ground bison if I have it, so mm-hmm. I'll give him a little bit of that. And that doesn't seem to bother him, but, you know, it's usually on top of his kibble and his regular diet. He's not just getting it, or it's
yeah.
a treat.
It's yeah. kind of mixed in. Well, that's really good, useful information. I'm glad to hear some of that. Any other techniques or training, anything that you've found useful for traveling, getting out with both your dogs?
Training wise, probably the best command that I have taught them is a solid weight command, which means that there's two different versions of it. One where I tell them to wait and they stop in their tracks, and no mm-hmm. matter what, they don't move until I either get to them or call them back to me. And then the other one that I taught is that if they're off leash, they don't get more than 10 feet ahead before they come back.
Okay.
So they know, like, they hit that certain point and they either stop or they turn around and come back. So to me, that's been really important, because if you run into something on the trail, like we ran into a deer when we were hiking, and I don't know if you saw the video of it, but
no, I haven't.
There was a deer not 50 feet from us in, on the trail, and all I said was wait, and Sox stopped, and he looked at me and looked at the deer, and I'll be honest, I was like, I don't know what he's gonna do here. You know, we'll see how good my training skills are. And he did not move a muscle.
Wow.
And that deer actually, he didn't bark, so the deer actually walked towards us, got within probably 10 feet, which is just absolutely incredible.
Whoa.
And Sox is just looking at me, looking at the deer, like, hey, I got told to wait, not really sure what to do here. And my husband had a hold of Echo, because Echo is very good, but he's still pretty new at that. We just didn't want to set him up for failure. And so the deer looked at Sox, and Sox looked at the deer, and then the deer went around us about 10 feet to the side, got behind us, and then started to walk towards us again.
Oh, wow.
And then we turned around and looked at him, and he finally just went on his merry way. But it was pretty incredible. Like, that was my dog mom brag moment probably of the century. Like, wow, I told my dog to wait while there was a deer right there, and he stopped and stood and did exactly what he was supposed to do.
Wow. Lots of treats for that.
Yes, bags of treats for that.
That's pretty impressive. And I guess that just comes from just constant training.
Every single day. I mean, we practice everywhere. In our living room, you know, when we're just taking them on walks to go potty, in the backyard, whether we're just at our local park. Like, every single day, there's some form of training happening in our household, because I think that consistency is what really builds your relationship with your dog.
You're using, of course, positive reinforcement, positive training. Are you treat training when you're doing that as well?
Sometimes we use treats, sometimes we don't. I don't want them to get dependent on getting a reward for listening, because there are certain scenarios where you're not going to have a treat readily available.
Sure.
And I don't think that they're, and I don't want to use the term obedience. I'm going to use the term cooperation. Their cooperation shouldn't be food dependent.
Okay.
In my mind.
I like that. I really like that. That's a great idea. You know, Echo is kind of a work in progress as well, that he's kind of getting to that point.
He is. He's actually picked it up very fast, and I think it helps having Sox kind of show him what to do.
Yeah.
We had a phase a couple weeks ago where it kind of went through what I'll call a teenage, I hear you, but I don't want to listen to you phase. So we just started some more obedience work and, you know, just kind of started working with him a little bit more firmly, which when you have a tripod is, it's very hard to be firm when you have a tripod. Let me just tell you, the struggle is real. And he just, like I said, we went through about a 2-week phase of that, and he just snapped right out of it. And, you know, I had him out on the 4th of July, and they would both like stop in unison on the trail, and they were never more than 15 feet ahead of me, and just were just absolutely wonderful how far he's come in such a short amount of time.
And so they've kind of bonded together pretty closely, pretty quickly.
They did, and we were very concerned about that, because Sox is very much an only child.
Yeah.
So
and that was
concerning.
And we kind of mentioned a little bit earlier the resemblance to, for instance, like the Vizsla breed, just kind of in appearance. How is his temperament is pretty similar too, I guess, when it comes to the loyalty or the hashtag Velcro dog?
No, they are not. Rhodesians are more like cats.
Okay.
So it's like living with a 100-pound cat, you know, if they want to be petted, they will come to you. If they want to lay on the couch, you had better get off of it. And I don't mean that in a negative way, but they're very, very different. They're very headstrong. They can be very stubborn, and it's very important to build a solid bond with them, or you're in for a wild ride. And I've actually helped some people through the rescue world who have gotten dogs that they don't necessarily mesh with.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's just been, I'm like, okay, here's what you need to do, because I mean, the dog's just kind of a nightmare, and I love the breed to death, but I don't recommend it for inexperienced dog owners.
Yeah. Plus that and the level of activity.
Very much. And I am, again, a firm believer in a tired dog is a happy dog.
Yeah. I'm the exact same way with Rue. Of course, being a Catahoula, she is extremely active. And yeah, it takes a lot to wear her out.
I love Catahoulas. I actually looked at them before I got into Ridgeback. So yeah, definitely similarities there.
Yeah. Beautiful dogs as well. It's been a lot of fun. And it's one of those, for me, it happened more just out of chance. She was a rescue, so we had no clue what we were getting into with her.
Aww, that's awesome, though.
When we got her. But it kind of worked out very serendipitously. Is that a word?
It is.
Yeah,
is a word.
It worked out well. being a runner, a trail runner myself, it goes really well. So that's
good. Sounds like you guys are a good fit.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to kind of move along here to, I know we talked about some of your favorite local places, but I want to get into a little bit more detail just because you live in such a beautiful place. Do you currently have an adventure planned, or one that you just went on one not too long ago?
Well, we went camping at the beach this weekend, which was a lot of fun, kind of an impromptu adventure. We have a 44-mile backpacking loop that I'm planning on doing in the next couple of weeks. That's up in the Glacier Peak Wilderness that I'm pretty excited about. We always have adventures planned, you know.
And when you say Glacier Peak, is that in any way related to Glacier National Park?
No, Glacier Peak is actually a mountain in Washington.
Okay.
So Glacier Peak Wilderness is a couple hundred miles from us, but you know, you usually have to get pretty far into the backcountry to access it.
Okay.
So that's my new fascination. So I've been, you know, mapping out routes and drawing, you know, up plans and doing obsessive research and just being my normal self.
Yeah. What resources do you use when you are planning trips like that?
Oh gosh. I go to REI and I will actually stand in front of the Green Trails map book and I will identify the section of whatever state that I am looking for. And I will find that map and I will study it obsessively. And then I will get on Google Earth and I will zoom in and see what I can find. I'll look for blogs. Sometimes there are blogs, sometimes there aren't.
Okay.
And I will just do what I can to figure out, you know, what I'm actually getting myself into before I get myself into it.
Yeah. Do you have pretty good local resources like outfitters or anything like that that, you know, people that you talk to on a regular basis that do stuff around the area?
I don't really talk to, I'm sure that there are, but I've never tapped into those resources.
I get that part because I'm completely one of those, like, I'll throw a dart at a map and then just kind of research it on my own and go that place without ever having talked to anyone. I always feel like I've missed something when I go out to these places and if I haven't talked to a whole bunch of people about it first. So that's why I'm always curious.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm kind of similar, throw a dart at the map and then research it obsessively until I think I know what I'm doing.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Glacier Peak Wilderness. I'm actually going to put that into the show notes. And I guess that kind of moves us on to kind of the final question, or unless there was some other places you wanted to talk about.
You know, that's kind of my current obsession right now. So we'll just stick with that before we go down that rabbit hole.
Okay. You sound a lot like me. I only have like a handful of places. So when people ask me, what are your favorite places? It's like, I talk about one or two and it's hard for me to like, because I'm usually focused on one specific thing that I'm going on.
Yeah. And I tend to focus on certain areas like at different times of year. So if I'm like stuck in one mode, I can't really like deviate from that mentally, I guess.
Yeah. Well, moving on to really the big question. Pretend I am going to take away all of your responsibilities. You don't have to worry about work. It's just going to be you and, of course, your husband and the dogs and a ticket to go anywhere and do anything. Where would that be?
So we actually have been kind of talking about this, and I would love to do it, but neither of us have had the time to take off work. But we want to drive from Washington up to Alaska and explore like Denali National Park, and just that whole Trans-Canada Highway has been fascinating to us ever since we heard about it.
Yeah. How long? Well, obviously you're a researcher, so you probably might already know this. How long of a drive is that?
It's, I think, a little over 4,000 miles. I don't know the exact mileage, but hey, it's a long ways.
That's not too bad. You did that.
No.
You did that in what, two or three days?
3 days.
Yeah.
If you drive like Ashley, you can be there in 4 days. But I would want to actually enjoy it.
Oh yeah. Oh, this is totally. I mean, we're gonna hook you up with an RV, decked out. So yeah, take your time. And no, I can imagine that's got to be just a beautiful drive. And I know that I've followed people on Instagram that have done that. So that is a, that's a very real possibility. We can make that happen.
We're, ironically, my husband and I have been very heavily throwing around the idea of building out like a Sprinter van and kind of hitting the road for a bit. So
yeah.
You never know what's going to happen.
Have y'all ever done anything like that? Like lived in an RV for an extended period of time?
No, we have a tent that goes in the bed of our truck that we prefer.
Okay.
And that's, yeah, that's typically where we wind up. I'm much more into tent camping than like RV camping.
Yeah, I'm very much the same way. I'm all about small and lightweight and sleeping in the car even when I'm not tent camping. So,
yep.
Plenty of space in there for the dogs though.
Yes.
Okay. Well, yeah. Well, then we can outfit a really great four-wheel drive truck. That'll be even easier than an RV.
Sounds awesome. I'll just pop my tent up, sleep wherever, go hiking. That sounds perfect.
Yep. Well, is there anyone either on Instagram or in real life that you want to give a shout out to?
Well, first I got to give a shout out to Amanda and Leilani for, you know, introducing us.
Yes.
That was pretty awesome of her. Amanda's great.
And I guess that's something that we really didn't talk about a whole lot earlier on in the episode, that do you guys know each other in real life?
Yeah, we do.
Okay.
Amanda and I have hung out on several occasions, and well, we've rescued her once from being stuck in the snow. That was kind of a funny story, but Amanda's just really great. Leilani is awesome, and Leilani and Sox hit it right off. Sox does very well with reactive dogs because
he's
so calm. So it makes it really nice for us to be able to go out with people who otherwise can't get out with other dogs.
Yeah, that is awesome. And that sense of community. Did you guys meet through Instagram or?
We did, yes. Okay. Actually, we had a couple of mutual friends and then we just started talking. And Amanda's background in work with animals and then my background in work with animals just kind of brought us together, and our
That's
mutual
great.
Love for dogs. And yeah.
That is awesome. Okay. So of course, I will include her in the shout outs. And if anyone hasn't had a chance to listen to it, definitely go back and listen to her episode. It's really great.
I did. And I thought her episode was very awesome. It touched on some really great things.
Let's see. Who else did you want to give a shout out to?
You know, I got to give a shout out to my husband because, well, not only does he put up with me, but he encourages, well, I won't say he encourages me, but he never tells me no. He's my constant adventure partner. He's always down for anything. And, you know, he's I say that he's a saint, and I truly mean it, because he's got the patience of a saint, and he's just the most amazing person I've ever met, really. And he's the reason that we were able to bring Echo home.
Yeah.
You know, the reason that I was kind of able to start working from home. He's just the most supportive person, and I'm just so, so lucky to have him in my life.
Yeah, it was definitely, if you didn't bring that up, I was going to, the fact that you can say, hey, I'm going to head out of town and bring back a dog.
Yeah, well, and then one of the passes between where we were and where we live was closed. So he actually drove out about 200 miles to pick me up.
Wow.
With Echo, like the last leg of our journey, because I couldn't get home. And so he dropped what he was doing and, you know, came and got me. But that's like one of the few times that we've ever been separated for more than a few hours. Was
okay.
That 3 days. And I was just, he's like, babe, I really don't think you're going to be home by Tuesday. He's like, I think Thursday is a safer goal. And I said, I'm going to be home by Tuesday because we have to take him to the vet on Wednesday. And I kept sending him pins of where I was at. And he woke up Tuesday morning and said, and he called me. He's like, where are you? And I said, Boise. And he said, are you kidding me? You're in Wyoming last night.
Wow.
Yeah. So just, he's always been very supportive. Another person I'd have to give a shout out to is my friend Connie. She has the Instagram at Good Enough Dogs.
Okay.
She's another one. She's always down to adventure. I'm like, hey, what are you doing? She's like, I don't know. What are we doing? And I said, we're getting up at 1 a.m. to go to Portland to shoot sunrise photos and the flowers. And she's like, okay, I'll be ready. And she was pretty instrumental in us bringing Echo home because my husband had to work and she stopped in and took socks out so that he got some attention. And, you
okay.
know, just the whole community just kind of came together to help us out on that.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it really does take a village.
Yes, absolutely. And when you can rely on friends, either through Instagram or in real life, that is hands down, that's the most important thing.
And it's just so amazing how many connections you can make through Instagram with people you really connect with if you're being your genuine and authentic self.
Yep. Yeah, I'm looking at her account right now. Addie and Obi?
Addie and Obi, yes.
Oh, beautiful pups. Oh, these are gorgeous. Yep. Okay. I will definitely include her in the show notes. Well, I guess that pretty much wraps it up. Was there anything else that you wanted to
I can't think
mention?
Of anything except I really appreciate you reaching out to me to do this interview. I just think that that's really amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. It's really cool. And like I said, I feel kind of, in a sense, I feel a little cheated. I haven't had a chance to like look through your entire photo album here. Okay, so I do have one more good question.
Of course.
And your husband shows up in so many of these photos. Who takes all the photos?
So I'm kind of a really weird. I love doing family photos once a year.
Yeah.
So the person who took the photos of us with socks playing in the snow is Stephanie Keegan. And you can look her up at Steph Keegan Photo,
okay.
I think is her Instagram. And her and I met through Instagram, but became friends in real life. And she's another great, always on adventures with her pups. Just a really, really good down-to-earth person and obviously an amazing photographer.
Yeah.
And when I called her up, I said, hey, I want, how much is it going to be for me to steal you for the day to go like deep into the backcountry? And she's like, you know, gave me a price. And I was like, okay, that's fine. And she's like, what did you have in mind? I'm like, well, this is what I want to do. She's like, okay, well, we'll see what the snow does. And then come the day that we were supposed to do photos, we had this huge like avalanche danger was really high. So we were texting all morning. We actually plan B didn't work out. So we wound up going with like location C, and then we got dumped like this awful, like heavy, wet snow, like not even any fun to really be in. And it was just, she was just so flexible and so great to work with. We had a ton of fun taking photos with her.
Well, the photos are amazing. You can't tell that if you hadn't told me that there were complications, I never would have known. These are absolutely fantastic, all of these photos looking at. Oh my gosh.
I'm pretty camera shy, so I was really excited with the way that they turned out.
Well, if nothing else, socks definitely makes up for that. Oh my goodness.
Socks. Oh my gosh. He knows commands to pose. It's ridiculous. And then he expects to be paid in bananas. So, you
know. He is all over the place and he's got some great, great photos in here.
Well, thank you.
And of course, I'm enjoying the ones of both Sox and of Echo as well. And I am looking forward to seeing a whole lot more of the both of them. So,
well, we've had some adventures and we have some more plans, so we will definitely be getting those out there soon.
I am glad to hear it, and I will be keeping up with you, so hopefully I will be in touch here. And yeah, so I just want to again say thank you for coming on. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me.
And you have a good night.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that was Sox and Echo at Wandering Ridgebacks. Every time I look at their photos, I have to stop and remember that even though Echo only has three legs, he's just a normal dog. But sometimes I can't help but just be absolutely amazed and totally inspired by his capability. Remember that part where we talked about throwing darts at a map to pick out our next adventure? Well, I spread out a map and let Rue pick our next adventure. She picked a totally new place for us, and it's going to be pretty cool. Just a quick weekend camping and trail running trip, but it has a pretty strange backstory, and it's one that has been on our list for a while. I'll let you know more about it later. I don't want to spoil the mystery just yet. I would absolutely love to know, though, how do you pick out your next adventure? Other people's advice? Maybe seeing pictures of it on Instagram? Completely random? Let me know. Email me and Rue at nathan@adventuredogpodcast.com or send us a DM on the gram. Subscribe to the show on iTunes or wherever you listen, and do us a huge favor. Give us a rating and review to help other adventure dogs find us. As always, thanks for listening. Now, go and have an adventure with your doggos.